When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Fastest growing economy of the G7 countries, fastest recovery of all of the G7 countries, lowest inflation rate of the G7 countries, unemployment rate 3.6%, nearly a five-decade low. Wages are now growing faster than inflation. Things are going right. Things are going in the right direction. We're rebuilding manufacturing. We're doing a bunch of infrastructure. We're doing stuff, getting stuff done, getting good stuff done. Stuff we should have done, years ago. Things that another guy, you may remember his name, weird-haired guy, always tweeted a lot. Tweeted a lot about how we were going to do infrastructure, how we were going to make the country great again. We were going to bring back jobs. Said a lot of words. There were a lot of words. There were words. Now, the words were empty, hollow, and worthless, but there were words. There were lots of them. In fact, we had lots of photos. There were lots of photo opportunities. There were lots of PR stunts, lots of gimmicks, lots of, hey, look at me. Not got anything done. Didn't do anything. In fact, during the 4 years of the weird-haired guy and the tweets, nothing. Nothing. Nothing got built. Nothing got done. Jobs didn't come back. We were promised we were going to reshore manufacturing. Promised we were going to save that plant in that GM plant in Lordstown, Ohio. Not, lots of promise. Lots of promises. Didn't do it. Didn't do it. But there is a guy. there's a guy who I affectionately call Jelly Bucket Joe. Jelly Bucket Joe shows up. Biden the Builder doing the work. And I spent a little time over at invest.gov today. And it was one of those things you go, wow, I didn't realize all of the things that we were doing. Spending about $503 billion committed so far. Private investment, about $503 billion to bring semiconductors. Now, we're paying a little bit. A small percentage of this is coming from the taxpayer. But look, we need to reshore and fast. But $231 billion in semiconductors and electronics. This is the frontier of the new world. This is what you have to build this stuff. You have to have the capacity. And, you know, thanks to corporate America, thanks to our well-heeled, well-funded, well-paid CEO class, we've lost this. And again, you know, I hate to say that we lost it. We know where it went. They took it over to China. They took it over to Southeast Asia. Because, hey, we can get cheap labor. We can exploit cheap labor, put that exploitation in our pockets. That's what corporate America decided. And they funded a bunch of politicians to help them do it. Now you got Jelly Bucket Joe going, hey, we're going to resource some of that stuff. We're going to bring those jobs back, and they better be union jobs. We're building EVs and batteries, $134 billion in private investment going into that. Clean energy, $104 billion in clean energy going there. $19 billion in biochemicals and $14 billion in heavy industry stuff. We're building stuff. Building stuff. And look, at the end of the day, the virus, you know, kind of, I think, I hope, if there was a positive to come out of this, we realized how dependent we are on parts of the world that don't like us very much. We find out that, you know, we should probably be building stuff, lots of stuff. And I look at the fact that Biden has done an incredible job, in my view. He really has. Just hasn't done the kind of, hey, look at me. He's Jelly Bucket Joe. He just shows up. He just does his job. The fact that they've added in during his term, in the 29 months that he's been president, they've added 13.2 million jobs. Let me say that again. 13.2. I know, but Rick, those were all the jobs that were, you know, that were lost during the Trump years because of the virus. They just all came back. No, they didn't all just come back. You don't just flip on a switch and go, everybody come back now. There's actually a process that goes through this. Now that's more than any president during a four-year term ever. Good on him. And it's because of the legislation that they moved. And in some cases, got, you know, a minute amount of bipartisan support. So we're calling that infrastructure bipartisan. Not so much. A lot of people on a bipartisan basis just want to take credit for it. Think the dumbest guy in the Senate, Tommy Tuberville. But we've got a strong foundation to build an economy from the bottom up and the middle out. We have an opportunity. And again, you know, his words, bottom up, middle out. Instead of the other way, there was a guy with slicked hair, a movie actor. You said a lot of lines, memorized the whole term. Oh, yeah, Ronald Reagan. The trickle-down stuff, trickle-down doesn't work. We figured that out. I think we figured that out. I think finally we have figured being trickled on, not good. I'm sure there's some people out there who prefer that, and that's their thing. And whatever you do within the confines of your four walls, that is your business. But in economic terms, it doesn't happen. Sorry, doesn't happen. I'm sure there's somebody out there who, like I said, enjoys being trickled on. Economically, it's not happening. There were no rivers of gold and honey. There was no manna from heaven. The only trickle is, well, you figure it out. But here's the thing, and this is where I keep coming back to. The jobs are roaring. You know, hundreds of thousands of new jobs. A couple hundred thousand jobs this month. More people right now. I just saw this weird statistic. The highest level since 2001. I'll get it right. More people 25 to 54 are working since 2021. More women 25 to 54 are working. The highest participation level in decades. Now the right's going to go, well, you know, there are all those jobs with, you know, participation. People are too lazy to work. Nobody wants to work anymore. People are lazy. Well, these numbers are kind of showing, no, not so much. If wages are going up, people are going to want the jobs. And we're seeing that. And it is a good thing. I think it is a good thing. It's something that we need. Now, the problem that we have is, and this is the weird part, you look at Biden's approval ratings, and they aren't great. Let's go with that. Not great. The fact that, you know, we had the fastest growth rate of any of the G7 countries. We've recovered faster than all of them. The inflation rate's much lower than all of them. You know, we've done so much better than everybody else. And yet, Biden's economic approval ratings are actually 7 points worse than his overall number. which is not great either. And to me, this should show us that the right-wing media sphere, this is what they're capable of. They flood the zone with horrible. They flood the zone with fear. They flood the zone with total BS. There's a recession coming. Didn't you know there's a recession right around the corner? Every day. When's the recession coming? You know, Biden economics is going to cause a recession. Biden economics is bad. And the reality is as they're still doing this, as it's still coming out of their mouth, as they're still wishing and hoping and, you know, in hands, the economy's still steaming along. Now, you go, but, you know, that's not all Joe Biden. No, it's not all Joe Biden. It's his policies. We're investing in stuff. The people who invest in buildings and you know, new startups, they see opportunity because you've got a government that says we're going to help. You know, as I said, I spent some time over at invest.gov, and I highly suggest that you do, because you can go through, and they've broken it down into private investment and public investment. You can see where the private investment is going. You can see, you know, places where, you know, chip manufacturing is happening. You can go to places where, you know, clean energy is being done. You can go to places where, you know, they're building factories. They're bringing jobs back. Or you can go and say, hey, look, you know, I want to see what public infrastructure is being done. How many projects are being done in my neighborhood? And I did. There's several in my neighborhood right now being done to help improve our lives. And I did this thing of, you know, just kind of scaling back to the whole country. And literally there isn't a place. I couldn't find a place where there wasn't really a public sector project happening. Every state, almost every piece of real estate, there's something going on. There's something happening in every state, and especially in the states that voted against Biden, which is weird. Again, the people who voted against him are reaping the benefits. And there's part of me that goes, you know, that jaded part of me, that part of me who could never be president, because, you know, I probably would be like Donald Trump and say, if you didn't vote for me, well, you're against me, you get nothing. Because I've always said, if you voted against the infrastructure bill, you don't get anything in your district. Because you're not representing your people. And maybe the people there will go, hey, you know, we want roads and bridges. Hey, you know, we need infrastructure. We need an airport. We need the work done. We need new sewer lines. We need new power lines. We need broadband access. And yet your representative, and my representative, Scott, pardon me, Perry, voted against all of this stuff. And yet in my district, there are things going on where he's going to take credit for. Look how wonderful. Look what I fought for. You voted against it, Scott, pardon me, Perry. And this is the weird moment. And I think this is why Democrats are doing more, I think a little bit better. And I give them credit. They're trying. This Investing in America website, invest.gov, has some cool stuff on there. I still wish it was a little flashier. Still wish it was a little more interactive, where you could, you know, maybe like Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, did, put that live stream on that project that's being built, so you can go, hey, let's see what's going on over there. And you could actually see your tax dollars at work and know that. And of course, I would want a giant Joe Biden pointing at it going, I did that, you know, image in the corner. But there's a lot going on. And it's weird to me, because I had this conversation where someone was, you know, telling me how bad things are, you know, how horrible the economy is, how inflation's killing everything, and how, you know, we're heading to this doomsday. And I finally said to him, I go, you know, where are you getting your information on this? Where's this all coming from? Yeah, inflation is not great. But understand, you know, if wages keep up, inflation isn't bad for the working class, especially if you're a debtor. Especially if you have a mortgage like virtually everyone in the working class. Not a bad thing. Again, as long as wages keep up. And this is where, you know, I look at what's going on, and we're going to talk about a little bit later about UPS. This is why workers organizing so very important. And why I love Jelly Bucket Joe. I got to tell you, I love the guy. The fact that he's saying, yeah, we're going to bring those jobs back and they're going to be union jobs. They're going to have good wages and benefits and security and the things that families desperately need. Because ultimately, when you look at what's going on, this is about families. This is about communities. This is about restoring dignity to those places that for too long, the largest employer in town is the hospital and the drug treatment center. It's time to get back to, you know, what people my age and older remember as the American dream. And you got a guy in the White House, and look, he remembers, you know, 80 years old? And I don't care. All the people who sent me emails saying, oh, he's 80 years old, don't care. Love the policies. If you can look at Donald Trump and say he's crazy, he's a criminal, he's doing all this insane stuff, he's dangerous to national security, mishandling classified stuff. If you can get away with saying, but I like his policies, I can do the same thing. I'm still trying to figure out what policies Trump championed other than, hey, look at me, how wonderful I am. But, you know, it is what it is. I like Biden's policies moving us in a positive direction. Now, I look at Kevin McCarthy every day putting out a tweet saying how bad things are. Still have no idea where Kevin McCarthy, where his eyes are and what he's seeing. I'm seeing a future. Not sure what Kevin sees. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, I come back to the policy stuff. I come back to the fact that Jelly Bucket Joe gets it. My boy Builder Biden on the right course came out and talked about these. And I remember this during the Trump years. Was dead set against these scam insurance, these short-term insurance things. You know, and Biden came out and said, look, you know, we got to crack down on these things, on these short-term plans. He called them a scam, said you can't leave Americans being played for suckers. This is good. He said, you know, in America, it sounds corny, but is fairness something we kind of expect? And I don't know anybody who likes being used, having been played for a sucker, taken advantage of. People are ready to meet their responsibilities. But I think this is a big deal. And I think it's time to start getting away from some of this stuff. These short-term plans during the Trump years were left unchecked. You know how they go. You know, we're going to get you the minimum coverage you need. We're going to get you the health care you need. We're going to give you a wonderful card, and it'll look shiny in your wallet. And you'll feel all secure knowing that, hey, I got health care. And it's like, you know, it's like eight bucks a month. And you go, wait, what kind of health care do you get like that? You know, it reminds me of, you know, my son and I had a conversation just the other day. Well, we're both learning to ride motorcycles. And we had to go get insurance because my son bought a motorcycle. So in order to get the motorcycle, got to have insurance. So he's like, you know, my friend says that insurance is like $100 a year. And I'm going, no. So we went through my insurance company. It turns out it's $800 a year for him. And what it is it covers him against real loss. So I showed him. I sat him down and we went through, this is what you get for $100 a year. This is the $100 a year plan. It is like $5,000 in damage, and it's $15,000 in medical. That's it. It is the bare state minimum. Doesn't cover anything on the bike. Doesn't cover anything. Covers virtually nothing. Now, here's what we got. You know, $100,000 and $300,000 in damage and all in the health care that if you get injured, there's all that. If your bike gets totaled, you'll get, you know, comprehensive collision. There's all this stuff. And this is the difference between what the Affordable Care Act was trying to do, saying, hey, we're going to make sure that there's bare minimum coverage here, that you're going to get checkups, that you're going to get, you know, you're going to get care when you need it, and it's not going to make you go broke. And then these scam plans that go, I've got health care. It doesn't cover anything, but I've got it. So good on Joe. Good on Joe for speaking out. Let's quick go to the phones. We've got Kurt in Tucson, Arizona on line one. Kurt, how we doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I am doing great. What's on your mind?
So I want to just add to the, I'm so optimistic right now about the future and bringing people together. On Monday, my wife and I were going to Ukraine. We've been taking classes for like a year with, do you know who Timothy Snyder is?
I'm afraid I don't.
He's a professor at Yale on the history of Eastern Europe and Ukraine.
Okay.
And he's created a program called Making a Modern Ukraine. And what we're going to be doing, what we're starting off with, is we're going to be documenting the war in Ukraine. And then in the whole program of the Making the Modern Ukraine, there's a lot of global initiatives that's going to start coming out of working together on a global level. And not only will it help Ukrainians, but it'll help us and all the countries that are participating in it. I'm so optimistic about this, Rick. And I think just for the countries as a whole, just the idea of us working together and at the same time working for a better, like, economies for, you know, not only for Ukraine, but it will help the United States as well. There's a whole lot of initiatives.
Yeah, I mean, all of Europe. I mean,
this whole program.
Ukraine is the breadbasket of Europe. I mean, there's a lot there that needs to be done. So good on you. So you're going to Ukraine. Not worried about safety, not worried about what, as an American going somewhere, like, not worried about, you know, something going on?
You know what, Rick? I feel very secure. And the reason why I say that, I know my wife would not, if she wasn't secure, we wouldn't be doing this.
I was going to say, I thought she was going to take care of you. You know, anybody bothers you, she's going to knock them out. I thought that's where you're going.
Right. But the people we're working with, I feel very secure with, and they are not going to lead us into harm's way. And we're not necessarily going to the we're not going to the front line,
right,
per se.
Of course not.
There's places where, I mean, you can look at a map and know that, hey, this is not the place to go. And not that the country is not, you know, things can happen, but I feel secure. And
good.
I don't think the Ukrainian people we're working with would lead us into harm's way.
It's great to hear from you again. I wish you the best. Stay safe, and when you get back, I'd love to hear about your trip.
Yeah, I'll have some good things to share with you.
I hope so. Thanks, Kurt. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye bye.
Wow, good on him, man. This is one of those things where, you know, when you look at me, I scream American. You go, hey, there he is. There's the American. Go get him. So, you know, I give credit to people who put themselves in that kind of peril and are willing to do that. I know in that situation, no matter where it is, they're going to go, there's the American. Get him. And that's going to be one of those things that I end up getting got. But good on him. I mean, the reality is we need, the globe needs a democratic Ukraine. And not, you know, with our thumb on the scale or anyone else's thumb on the scale. But, you know, the fact that, that Russia was moving, is moving in that direction, it's not good for the globe for Russia to start wanting to get the old gang back together. And the fact that Biden, again, I give him credit for doing the right thing. We did not put boots on the ground, which I was against from the beginning. We did not get it. We did not go in and take over, which I say was the right thing. But we did make sure that the people had what they needed. And we're still doing that. Now I come back to manufacturing. Had we all those manufacturing plants that we allowed to go under, this would have been a lot easier. Something we got to talk about. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So for our, especially for our folks in Minneapolis listening on KTNF AM 950, tomorrow, big day of, it's Solidarity Saturday. I want folks to find their local UPS store, their local UPS hub, and maybe adopt a informational picketer right now. Could be a striker very soon, but get to know where they are. As I say all the time, every person during strike time, you should be adopting a striker and help spread the word, help give support, and, well, help your community. And that's why I have asked Scott Wilkie to come talk with us. Scott Wilkie is the communications director for Teamsters Local 638. They're in Minnesota. They cover Minnesota and North Dakota. Their website, teamsters638.com. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for reaching out. I really appreciate it.
So tell me what's going on tomorrow, Saturday. What's going on in your neck of the woods out there in Minnesota?
Right. So if you've seen on social media, we've began across the country for UPS Teamsters. We're doing informational practice pickets to raise awareness on a potential strike here in a few weeks. And we're going to hold hopefully one of the biggest ones in the country tomorrow morning, Saturday, 8 a.m. Central Time to about 11 a.m. At the UPS Minneapolis Broadway Hub, which is sort of the heart of our local. And we've got a lot of people coming out. We've got local media coming out. We've got Teamsters Local 120, which represents UPS in South Dakota, coming down. We've got MNA, which has about 15,000 members. They're going to show up. Education Minnesota, Minneapolis Federation of Teachers 59, AFL. The list goes on and on. SEIU supporting it, and some politicians that are very pro-labor as well plan to show up. So it's going to be a big event. If you are in the Twin Cities, we ask that you just come and walk the line with us. We'll have some music, we'll have food, and a lot of solidarity.
You know, I've been saying that this could be one of those moments, Scott, you know, like your neck of the woods back in 1934 helped move the freight industry in the right direction. This could be one of those moments that helps an industry, helps the logistics industry, the package delivery industry to rise all boats, to make living conditions better, to make wages better and working conditions better. Because you guys, I got to tell you, you guys work in some pretty desperate conditions. The heat in the summer, the cold in the winter. I don't think most people understand that.
No, and especially up here in the Midwest, you know, we get it all up here. We'll get, you know, sub 30 degrees in the winter, and we'll get 110 degrees in the summer. Before coming on to the local in this role, I was a UPS driver for 13 years and a steward. So I've done the job. I did it through the pandemic. This contract for us is about a lot of things. You know, right now we're hung up at the end on part-time pay. We can talk about that, but you know, for our drivers, it's really the working conditions and quality of life. the back of the package cars, they have clear roofs. It'll, you know, the temperatures up there are so hot, you feel like you're literally cooking. We have people that get sent to the hospital every single year. We've had people that have died on the job from the heat. In the winter, you know, we've had people that get frostbite. It's, you're out in the elements, you know, a lot. There's not a lot we can do to control it, but, you know, getting air conditioning in the package cars is a huge step in the right direction. Getting adequate heat for the winter is a step in the right direction, but also controlling the amount of hours that the drivers work in a week. You know, right now UPS has come out and said, well, you know, these drivers that, you know, they make X amount of dollars, you know, a full scale package car driver makes $93,000 a year. Well, that statistic is true. You know, I did make that through the pandemic, but you're working 6 days a week, forced overtime. If you don't work those hours, then you face discipline from the company for not working those hours. And you're watching your kids grow up through Facebook posts and putting them to bed through FaceTime. And that's not what anybody wants, right? People need to be able to get home and see their families. And so we're getting quality of life language, but also language that provides us just a safe working environment. And really that, again, to your point, sets the standards in labor. That's what the Teamsters have always done. We're proud of our history in Minneapolis for, like you said, setting those standards. And we have to continue to do that because then everybody in the logistics industry benefits, right? Yeah. And that's the big picture perspective.
Now, you mentioned the pandemic, and one of the signs I have here in the studio says essential work should pay off. It's one of the UPS signs that we got when we were on our Working Class Heroes radio tour. That should be the minimum here. I mean, this is a wildly profitable company. Last I saw, and maybe you have bet different numbers, but $13.9 billion in profit last year. I don't know how much of that is minus all of the stock buybacks and all of the stuff, the sweeteners that they put out for the shareholders and their CEOs. But $13.9 billion, that's not shabby.
No, and, you know, and I mean, for us, we look at that like those are profit margins that are reflected by paying your people substandard wages, right? The sacrifices, again, that the workers have made personally and professionally and working, you know, working through the pandemic. We didn't have, you know, vaccines, of course, but we didn't have masks. We didn't have hand sanitizer. We didn't have anything. And people were out with COVID and we didn't have any therapeutics. We didn't know what was going on. We had people die. Right. And then what happens on the back end is the company says, oh, we don't have enough, you know, money to give you guys. Sorry. But we know they're a publicly traded company. Out of one side of their mouth, they'll say that we made record profits. And then on the other side of their mouth to us, they'll say we don't have enough money. But, you know, a number like that, I mean, even on a bad year, quote unquote bad year that they're on right now, where they're still making billions of dollars a month, they can afford to raise part time pay to a respectable level to where, you know, people aren't on assistance, aren't on, you know, food stamp programs, aren't on subsidized housing and those things where they can afford to have a respectable life outside of work for the work that they do to this company and what they've built it to be.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. There are 340,000 part-time, full-time UPS workers, members of the Teamsters Union. A large percentage of that are part-timers who during the pandemic were, you know, heaped with praise. These are folks who, you know, they were the heroes. They were essential. I'm sure you've heard all of that. Locally, where I'm at in central Pennsylvania, the hub here was paying their part-timers $24 an hour to get them in the door. And then, you know, recently, you know, a couple months ago, I guess, arbitrarily, they just decided, you know what? We've decided we're going back to the $14 an hour and just arbitrarily took that money back that these folks, you know, were earning. This, to me, large slap in the face, especially when you're making $13.9 billion in pure profit. I got a problem with that.
Yeah, we've had the same issue. I mean, it's been a national issue with the MRA abuse, really. You know, you lure people in, they leave other jobs because they see this, you know, shiny new job over here that might pay $4 or $5 an hour more. And then they pull the rug out from underneath them after a few months. And, you know, UPS management, if you ask them, will tell you that the best production and workforce they had was when they did raise the wages, because now, you know, these folks can't walk down the street and find a job with similar pay, and the job matters more to them. And you create, again, a better quality of life for folks. And that's what we want to get back to. But we need a contract with language that doesn't allow for that anymore. If you pay somebody a wage and you hire somebody at a certain wage, you can't pull it up from underneath them later. It's completely unfair. And it's caused people to lose money, not only because now they're getting paid less, but also they may have left the job where they would have made more had they stayed. And that's completely disrespectful. And you can't have that anymore.
I know people who, you know, they took the job. Hey, I'm going to make $24 an hour. And then they're like, what? They can do this?
Yeah.
And the shock was that legally they can get away with it because the contractual language puts it at a certain rate. So I remember during the thing saying, hey, you probably should be negotiating at least the people who got hired this to keep at that level. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Scott Wilkie. Scott's the communication director for Teamsters Local 638. Out in Minnesota. They cover Minnesota and North Dakota. Check out their website, teamsters638.com. We'll get links out on social media. Now, I'm sure you've seen the news like I have. Nobody knows what's going on behind closed doors at the bargaining table. But, you know, the news media is kind of throwing this out as, you know, well, both sides walked away from the table. You know, both sides pushed away. And, you know, and UPS is, you know, saying, no, we still want to negotiate with the cost neutral language that we threw out. Are you getting any sense of any thoughts on what's going on? Are your members, you know, feeling a little anxious? What are you seeing?
Well, from our perspective and everybody I've spoken with, and if you watch any of the interviews that our general president, Sean O'Brien, has done, that's not what happened, right? I wasn't in those rooms, and even if I was, I couldn't talk about what happened, right? But everything that we've heard is that at 4:15 in the morning, UPS said, well, this is the best we can do. And we know it's not the best they can do. The offer that they gave for our part-timers' wages was completely disrespectful. And frankly, we know what the part-timers are worth, and they know what they're worth. So even if hypothetically the Teamsters had agreed to whatever that low proposal for wages was, the majority of the Teamsters at UPS are part-time. And so that contract wouldn't have been ratified anyway. So it's really a waste of time to slap part-timers in the face with low wages. You have to pay part-timers what they're worth.
That is an excellent excellent point, Scott, because talking with some of the part-timers, they're like, look, they hired us in here at $24 an hour. That's what we're worth. That's what we're getting. And I haven't even heard them, you know, anywhere close to that. So it seems like, you know, it doesn't matter what O'Brien does. The membership, they've got it in their head that they want much better.
Right. And so kind of to your point there is it is about the membership. That's what they've hired, you know, us to do, is to represent them in their needs. We've got thousands and thousands of proposals for the 22.5 language, which is language that covers those part-time wages. And they all need increases. And all of those increase in those proposal numbers were all relatively similar. They know what they're worth. And it's our job to work with UPS to get them what they're worth. Otherwise, you know, we can't get a contract.
Yeah,
right?
What they earn. I mean, all, you know, people say what they deserve. No, it's what they earn. They should get what they earn. Now, what do you say, Scott, to the people who go, well, you know, they already make too much. They make more than FedEx. They make more than Amazon. UPS just can't sustain that. What's the argument against that?
Well, I would say that. I'd say a couple of things. Personally, I'd say
keep
it
clean. No profanity, please.
I think you guys should organize, right? Because I think you're worth more. And, you know, like, so for me, my wife's a union nurse, right? And here in Minnesota, there was a huge strike with MNA. And here's what happens. The MNA goes on strike. They get what they're worth in their contract. Out in New York, a few weeks later, New York nurses go on strike and they piggyback off. So we know what we're worth because they know what they're worth out there. They get better wages and benefits. Even if you're not directly affected, if you're in the industry, you are positively affected, because for one of our UPS hubs, for example, up in Maple Grove, Minnesota, literally on the other side of the street is an Amazon hub. To the south of it, on the other side of that street, is a FedEx facility. So if those folks know that the grass is greener on the other side, they're just going to go across the street and apply, right? And so it forces other people in the industry to raise standards of their work environment, of their wages and benefits, to get the people what they're worth. You know, if you're working as a nurse up here in the north where we are, where we're all union nurses and they get paid they should get paid more, but they get paid pretty well. If you're in the south, those hospitals know that if they don't take care of their people, they'll just move north where wages are better. So it raises the bar for everybody. And that's the strength of a union, right? Is raising the bar and raising the standards for labor so that people don't get exploited.
Yeah. It's all about wages, hours, conditions. So let's go back to Saturday. You know, all across the country, Solidarity Saturday, informational pickets. I'm sure it's going to be fun. There's going to be a lot of party atmosphere, all of that stuff. And I hope folks will find their local UPS hub. And as I've said, for on every strike, go adopt a picketer. But here's the thing. The very real reality is the days are ticking away to where this could be real. Any thoughts on the possibility of this happening?
Well, you know, I think everybody's, you know, hopeful that UPS will, you know, do the right thing and not strike themselves. I mean, it's basically one issue right now. And again, I don't know all the details, right? There's a non-disclosure. I'm not at the table.
Sure.
But everything that we've been told from our leadership says that we're hung up on part-time wages right now. And UPS has the money to do it. They need to give our leadership a call and let them know, hey, we've got a respectable offer here for you. And then it's over with. It's really that simple, but we, you know, nobody wants to see a strike. It's the last resort for everybody. But the bottom line is that we can't continue on this path. I worked as a UPS driver throughout the pandemic, and I could go on and on and on about how hard it was, but we can't continue on this path because it's just not sustainable for their workforce. Yeah. So we need positive change, and UPS needs to do the right thing and set the example of what a company should do for its people and reward them. And then we all move on and keep the supply chain moving.
There you go. Scott, I wish you guys the best. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again as this continues down the road. But for all across the country, find your local hub in Minnesota. Our friends listening on KTNF AM 950, 8 AM, I guess, in the Minneapolis, what's the address there again?
We're located in Minneapolis here. Teamsters Local 638 office is located in Minneapolis. We also cover North Dakota, but we're in the central time zone.
There you go. Scott, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Thanks so much. Look forward to talking to you again.
I appreciate it, Rick. Have a good night.
As I've said, find yourself a spot tomorrow. Go and adopt a striker. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1998. That was the first day of a 48-hour general strike in Puerto Rico. The strike was called in support of telephone workers who had walked off the job 3 weeks earlier. The workers were protesting government plans to sell off the publicly owned telephone service to GTE, a private company based out of Connecticut. As the strike of the telephone workers continued, more and more Puerto Ricans rallied to their cause. A general strike was endorsed by more than 50 unions, along with other civic, political, and religious groups. The group of organizations leading the strike went by the acronym CHAOS. For 2 days, the general strike shut down almost all activity in the nation. Work at stores, banks, and the halls of government ground to a halt. Transportation ground to a halt as bus drivers and taxicab drivers took to the picket lines. Many in the crowd waved Puerto Rican flags. In the streets, the chant could be heard, Hilga, Hilga, or Strike, Strike. Many also chanted, Never surrender. The telephone company belongs to the people. The strike won support outside of Puerto Rico as well. The Health and Hospital Workers Union 1199 in New York issued a statement of solidarity and a $100,000 donation to help support the cause. After the success and support of the general strike, the telephone workers remained on the picket line. The strike wore on for 41 days. In the end, GTE won the day. The company promised not to retaliate against any striking workers. But when they took over, the company reduced staffing through so-called voluntary layoffs and early retirements. This is yet another chapter in the fight against privatization. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Rick. So it's just like high school, evidently, in Congress. You know, how bad is it when the House of Representatives is this screwed up? But evidently, the Freedom Caucus, otherwise known as the Crazy Caucus, the Crazy Conservative Caucus, the House Freedom Caucus, they ousted Marjorie Trainwreck Greene. They threw her to the curb because evidently, and I don't even actually know why, she's crazy like they are, but just not the same kind of crazy, I guess. She's kind of teamed up with McCarthy because she's smart enough to know, you know, to go towards a path of power, try and grab the gavel. Because I can see at some point Republicans losing their minds even more and making that one the speaker. That would be hysterical. That would be well worth the price of, you know, losing the country, I guess. But I guess the House Freedom Caucus is trying to notify her that she's been ousted. And she won't return their call. And I'm going, you know, it's just like high school. And now they're going back and forth over. Very, very funny. Now, you remember me talking about the Moms for Misery, the Maniac Moms for Misery conference that happened in Philadelphia? Moms for Liberty, you know, funded by right-wing billionaires and, you know, with an agenda to destroy public education. You remember them? They had a guy who came and spoke. His name was Ryan Walters. We've talked about Ryan in the past. He is the Oklahoma State Superintendent. He's the top education guy there. He was doing a little radio gig, I guess. And he's arguing that teachers, you know, shouldn't talk about race, shouldn't mention race when they talk about the Tulsa race massacre, you know, the 1921. You may have heard this story. In fact, we do a labor history in 2 on this. On a day in May, I think it was May 31st into June 1st, you had what was known as Black Wall Street in Tulsa, where you had thousands of black families who owned homes and businesses, and it was a thriving community, a thriving black community that a bunch of white people got angry at and burnt it all down. And they're saying, you know, according to the Oklahoma Historical Society, what they have written is, quote, believed to be the single worst incident of racial violence in American history. The bloody 1921 outbreak in Tulsa has continued to haunt Oklahomans. During the course of 18 terrible hours, on May 31st and June 1st, 1921, more than 1,000 homes and businesses were destroyed, while credible estimates of deaths range from 50 to 300. By the time that the violence ended, the city had been placed under martial law, thousands of Tulsans were being held under armed guard, and the state's second largest African-American community had been burned to the ground. Now, Mr. Walter, the state superintendent, the guy who's the head of the school there, he says, quote, to say it was inherent that because of their skin is where I say that is critical race theory. Let's not tie it to the skin color and say that the skin color determined that. We're whitewashing Black Wall Street burning? And the answer is, yeah, we shouldn't talk about who it was. Yeah, there's some homes that were built. They were burned down. You know, people lost their life savings. People lost their lives. You know, but nobody knows why. There's no reason. Who knows? Who knows? And this is the weird thing. This is what the Moms for Liberty group, you know, is talking about. We can't talk about what was racial. Now, understand, when we did our civil rights tour back in 2015, we went to a lot of places where black people were treated really badly. And now you have, you know, these museums and these institutes and all of these things that have popped up going, hey, tourists, come see how bad we were to black people. And look, there were some really, really great places that we went to where the history is there, because I wanted my kids to actually learn history, not this whitewashed version of, you know, there was a fire. There were some buildings that were burned. Still not sure why this area of Wall Street-ish kind of place was attacked. Nobody knows why. It's a mystery. It's completely a mystery. Maybe it was spontaneous. The gods were angry. You know, this is the kind of history they want taught, which is dangerous. Now, as I said, we took our kids around and we went to places where really bad, where they were hanging people and burning people, and our history, not good at all. But here's as I'm looking at this stuff, and there was some pretty, I mean, really bad stuff. In fact, a couple of them, because we had small kids, the curators would go, hey, you know, for this section, you know, can we bypass this with the kids? And I'm like, oh, absolutely. You know, if we're going to see burning bodies and you know, in all kinds of, they don't need to see that at 5 and 6 years old. They just need to know bad things happen. They got the point. At no point did I feel responsible. Now, I'm a white guy. I'm told I should feel guilty. I don't. I didn't do it. But what I can say is, you know, my ancestors did. You know, people of the past did. And they're responsible. And how about we not do it again? See, here's the part where I look at someone like Walters. I look at these maniac moms for liberty. I fear these are the people who go, we should do that again. Worked out really well the first time. That's the fear. So you learn history so that you don't make the same mistakes. And you don't just take quotes from history, like North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson says, we need to learn the quotes of Hitler and Pol Pot and those such, because there are some folks who think, you know, Hitler got railroaded, RFK Jr. This is why education is so important, and this is why the right wants to destroy public education. They want to privatize so they can whitewash their version of history, and we can continue to have our heads in the sand. Because it's so much nicer in the sand, isn't it? And me, as someone who, you know, I want to know the truth. I think that's important. I want my kids to be exposed to what happened so that they don't make those mistakes. Now, I know we all like to believe, you know, we would be the Crusaders or different in that time period. We wouldn't have been. But this is sad that this guy got elected. This is something that should get him thrown out. This is something that they should show him the door. Time for you to go, Mr. Walters. Yeah, good try. Maybe next time. Want to hear your thoughts. Was it about race? Or was it, who knows why the place caught on fire? You know, bad wiring. Back after this.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So this is one of these weird things. You know, I admit, Joe Biden doesn't get the sentences out, doesn't hit the punchlines enough. There's a lot of stammering. Guy's got a stutter. He's got a problem. That's factual. But have you seen Donald Trump speak? I mean, the guy is a blubbering idiot. I mean, you know, I know there's a lot of videos out there of Biden stumbling over words, but wow. The only thing I can think of is the shooter in Texas got 90 life sentences. So Trump had to think, well, there's a guy with a weird name. He shot up a Walmart. We got to do something. I guess this is where him saying he's going to bring travel bans back that are going to be even bigger than before because, well, you know, we don't want people shooting up, blowing up shopping centers. And I'm going, you know, where is this coming from? It's going to be interesting to see the debates because, you know, I admit, you know, Biden's got some struggles, but Trump, wow, blubbering idiot. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on making travel bans great again. I've asked our good friend Rich Ojeda to come talk with us. Rich is our host of Ojeda Live, a nightly hit on Facebook and YouTube. He's also the founder and chief cook and bottle washer over at the Turn Left Pack. You can check out their site, turnleftpack.org. Rich, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, always a pleasure, Rick. You know, when I sit and I think about the things that Donald Trump says he wants to do, when you can decipher through the blabber that he is spewing, you know, it's almost like, you know, his next campaign slogan should be Mein Kampf on every coffee table. Maybe that is what it needs to be. You know, it's absolutely amazing. You know, but the thing is that the supporters of Donald Trump, either they are smart enough by now to have turned, or they're just not smart enough and they're locked into this. and they're going to support Donald Trump because Donald Trump hates the same people that they hate. The downside to this is that, you know, when you look at Donald Trump, you know, you can go down to Florida and you see signs that say Latinos for Trump. You know, do they not realize that, you know, how does Donald Trump look at the Hispanic people? He calls them rapists and murderers. You know, Stephen Miller had a plan to literally use drones to sink boats that were out to sea in the Gulf of Mexico that were trying to make their way to America. And do they not think that some of those people on those boats are Latino from places like Cuba? You know, it just it's absolute garbage. Donald Trump is a racist. And, you know, if you are a racist, then you're with Trump. That's it. I mean, that's just the way that if you are if you're a racist or if you are poorly educated, you're automatically with Trump.
That. But this idea that we're going to bring travel bans back. And you hit an interesting point because I'm still waiting for Fox News to get on the MS-13 around every corner bandwagon, especially.
Oh, they're going to try it. They're going to use that.
Has tapped down a little bit. But this is red meat to the base. You know, this is red meat. This is him in a corner and desperate to get the attention and get the media again to fall all over him so that he can throw out the red meat to the base. That's how I saw this. But it's one of those things you go, how does this get between his ears today when you look at the fact that, you know, the guy who shot up the Walmart got 90 life sentences and they should have given him 100. There's nothing here to make our lives better. That's the problem that I have.
Well, I will tell you, it's just the racism that is blatant here. You know, I guarantee you there's not going to be a travel ban from the northern part from up north. It's going to be a travel ban from places where Muslims come and people like, you know, south of the border. It's sad that here we are in 2023 and we're going backwards. We're going back to, you know, there's a significant amount of people that just want us to go back to the 50s and 60s in this country, you know, and it's sad, you know, and if you pay any attention to the history, if you really do pay attention and you realize some of the underhanded things that were done to people of color, you know, either you are completely evil and racist and you're okay with it, because if you're not, you should be willing to fight and stand up against this. You know, I will tell you, there was a small book that I read, and I have a lot of books and I read all the time. But I'm going to tell you that one of the most amazing books was a book, and it was a small book, and it was called How White People Got So Rich. And it is just absolutely eye-opening. You know, when you realize that, you know, out of all of the African Americans that fought during World War II, less than 2% of them were able to actually use their GI Bill benefits. And it was set up like that. They were told about them. And then when they come back, they wasn't given them. You know, I mean, it's a shame. And we've got people in this country that don't have a problem with that.
This is the thing. I mean, you see people, especially in West Virginia, these are folks who are struggling. So when you say this, you know, how white people got rich, you know, there are a lot of white people who are poor too. Lots of them. So, you know, immediately the right is able to play on that by going, well, they're saying you're rich and they want to take from you and give to them. And they play this divide and conquer game when the reality is there were white people who got rich. It wasn't those of us who were at the bottom scraping to get by. So we maybe should still be talking about, you know, which white people are we talking about?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You know, but in some cases, you know, especially when you're talking about racism, you know, you have some people that just feel like as long as those black people over there are doing worse than that white guy, then they're content. They'll be okay with it. And, you know, it shouldn't be that way. But I mean, that's a problem that we have in this country. We, you know, it's like when Donald Trump, you know, come out. It's amazing the things that he was able to say and do and get away with. I mean, I it just it 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 it's hard to believe that we are where we are.
No, and the thing is this is where education matters. This is where, you know, I just talked about the fact that, you know, Maniac Moms for Misery, the Moms for Liberty group is, you know, is pushing this, you know, this kind of insanity. And one of the people who spoke at their conference, this Ryan Walters, the guy who's the state superintendent in Oklahoma, is saying, look, you know, that Tulsa massacre thing that, you know, most people never learned about in high school or in school, because I didn't learn about it until 2015 when we researched our labor history in two, and we did a labor history in two on this. But he's now saying, you know, we shouldn't talk about skin color. Skin color didn't determine that. You know, we shouldn't talk about that at all. It just happened. It was like spontaneous. Granted, it only happened to those people. You know, we can't say who they were, but there was only a certain group of people that happened to.
Yeah. No, I think it's sickening that we have people that are literally trying to hide history. And to me, I think it's important. You know, it's like that little book that I was talking about. That book opened my eyes to a lot of things. And, you know, when you understand history and you start to realize that, you know, how wrong it was that people that served in World War II were denied their GI Bill benefits when everybody else, when the white people were using the GI Bill benefits to be able to purchase their homes, you know, and they denied black people that because they didn't want black people purchasing homes in their neighborhoods. You know, I mean, it's sad that, you know, we find ourselves in this situation. It's sad that it's 2023 and we realize that they're just as racist now as they were back then. Yeah. You know, it's a shame.
No, again, this is why it's so important to fight these fights. Look, you know, I got into an argument not too long ago with somebody over critical race theory. The fact that, you know, schools aren't teaching it. It's a complicated legal theory taught in law schools. It isn't in your kids' elementary school. But maybe the idea that there are some structural problems that maybe we should be looking at fixing. I wasn't responsible for it, but maybe we fix it so that we don't continue the practice. Sounds reasonable, but not to some.
Well, you know, I tell you, it's just like, you know, to us, you know, education wise, you know, why do we have people that are trying to hide our history? You know, that's a problem. It's so disappointed that here we are at this time. And these are the fights. You know, I don't want somebody telling me what my kids can read. I want to now make no mistake. I don't have a problem knowing what my kids are reading. But, you know, I want my kids to learn the truth. I want my kids to learn the history, you know, and I mean, it's all a bunch of lies. These people coming in there trying to say the things that they're saying in terms of what kids should be and shouldn't be allowed to read. You know, history doesn't make you a bad person. You know, if you pay attention to history, it should really humble you, especially when you realize how, you know, when you know that people had struggled, it gives you empathy for them, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's the way it should be. And it's just, I don't know, it's a shame that we have our country today is literally trying to do things that I could see happening in North Korea, Russia, places like that. But, you know, and we've got people that are absolutely not smart enough to realize what Donald Trump wants. Donald Trump wants to be a dictator, period. He likes dictators. Everything that he talks about, everything that he does mirrors dictators. And it's a shame when you see people that, you know, are okay with that. I mean, look at these interviews that take place at these Trump rallies. We see a lot of absolute poorly educated people. But you also see people that when they are given the facts, they look right into the camera after they realize that they can't win the argument and they say, I don't care. I don't care. It doesn't matter. I don't care. I like Donald Trump and I don't care what he does. And that's just, I tell you, Donald Trump did one thing. He made America hate again. And he was able to capitalize on that and build a just amazing, just, it's so sad.
Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Rich Ojeda. Host of Ojeda Live. He does a live hit every night on Facebook and YouTube. He's also the chief cook and bottle washer and founder of the Turn Left Pack. We'll get links out on social media. I can take a look at that. Turnleftpack.org is the website. Now, it's interesting you bring this up because, you know, I was just, you know, just thinking as you were talking about, you know, what people want kids to learn in schools. We don't want them to learn about all the horrible things we did to Black people in slavery. That was less than 150 years ago. We don't want to learn about that there are people who are different who have contributed. None of the LGBT stuff. Can't have that. No science that doesn't, you know, conform with their religious ideology. But we do want them to teach kids how to. Because they want, hey, that stuff should be taught at home, you know, religion, all that. But they want the schools to teach kids how to change a tire or balance a checkbook, you know, things that should be taught at home. It's weird, the world that they're trying to push us towards, where, you know, the important stuff we're going to gloss over, but the stuff that parents should be doing, well, maybe that's what we have the schools. It's weird to me, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, I tell you, I've always thought that, you know, there was a lot of things that I had to go through as a child going through school that I never have used ever. You know, a waste of time as far as I'm concerned, and how it would have been so much better to learn about, you know, certain things, learn about taxes, you know, learn about job interviews and things like that. And yeah, you know, fixing cars and you know, everybody should have a basic knowledge of certain things. You know, I could say it wouldn't even bother me if you actually had gun safety, because we did. I grew up in West Virginia. I can remember we had a hunter safety program when I was in grade school, and all the kids went through it, and you got a nice little patch of a bear, you know, and that was, you know, because where we were from, you know, most kids would take a week off during deer season, because where I come from, if you didn't get a deer, in many cases, you didn't eat. So, you know, I mean, I can see that, but it's just a shame that, you know, we have parents, and in many cases, these aren't even educated parents that are out there at these boards of education threatening, you know, these boards of education leaders. I mean, that's a shame. You know, my thing is okay, then you don't want us to teach our kids real history. So here's the thing. All these people go in front of these boards and scream that they don't want this, they don't want this, they don't want this, but they're not telling us this is what we want. We want to teach this. They're not giving us that. They don't want us to teach our kids history. So then what do you want us to teach? You know, because I don't see anybody coming out saying this is what we want. They're just spewing the same garbage that they hear.
Now, what I wanted to talk about, we just spent a whole lot of time on the Maniac Moms for Misery. But I wanted to talk about the economy, Rich. I mean, the reality is things are going in the right direction. Jelly hey. Bucket Joe is killing it, showing up, doing the job.
Look, let me tell you something. We know for a fact that the first 2 years of President Biden legislatively have went down as the most positive 2 years in any president's history. Now, he has already reduced the deficit by like $1.6 trillion. He's on track to have it at $2 trillion by the end of this year. You know, my thing is if we give him another 4 years, my goodness gracious, every Republican, as soon as they come on board, what do? Every Republican gets handed a decent opportunity. You know, Bill Clinton balanced the budget. President Obama took it down almost, you know, to where it needed to be. But every time a Republican takes over, they give tax breaks to the rich, and they give all this money to corporations and put us back in debt again. You know, if we give Joe Biden another 4 years, he absolutely could balance the budget. You know, and as far as, you know, he talks funny. Well, he had a stutter. But I'll tell you what, Joe Biden is kicking butt. He is the number one jobs president that we've ever had. You know, and like they just got 209 more thousand jobs. He's over 13 million. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, why would we not want to give him another 4 years?
Yep. No, and that's the bottom line in it. We need 4 more years. But Rich, as always, I appreciate the time. Good stuff, my friend.
Thank you, brother.
Our good friend Rich Ojeda. Make sure you check out his Facebook and YouTube live every weeknight. Also, the Turn Left Pack, where he is the chief cook and bottle washer and founder. Find out what they're doing there. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Let's quick go to the phones. We got Alice on line one. Alice, what's on your mind?
What I wanted to say is this. One thing about the right wing and Republicans in particular is they love revisionist history. It doesn't matter if it's history. It doesn't matter if it's something that happened last year or 2 weeks ago. They have to revise it. They twist it around to where it no longer resembles the original happening.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, they do it with everything. You know, it's just totally insane. And you know, like they're trying to revise, you know, things about Joe Biden. And it's all about Hunter Biden. And it's like, who even cares? Hunter Biden has nothing to do with anything.
Yeah.
And until you can prove that Joe Biden did anything illegal, shut up. So I don't know. I think they're all insane. And that's my professional opinion. Have a good evening.
There you
Rick.
Go. Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. Let's go to the phones. We got Chad on line two. Chad, how are you?
Hello?
What's on your mind, brother? Chad, you're on. What's on?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, what's going on? What's on your mind?
Okay, I don't know if you can hear me, but I'm having a couple problems as being an undecided voter when I listen to what's going on out here, and especially, you know, coming from the Biden camp. You know, we all want to rip on Donald Trump, and that's fine. The man is, he is who he is. He's not the most articulate, and he speaks, you know, from the heart. But, you know, quite frankly, under him, we were energy independent. We were, you know, our own net exporter of oil. We had the lowest unemployment in 45 years. There was the lowest African-American unemployment in over 40 years.
Yeah, and that's where we are right now. So what's your point?
$3. And my portfolio was rising. Now it's in the tank. I'm trying to vote for somebody, and it's all it is you know, saying orange man bad. And I'm trying to figure out, again, there was no threat right, from China, you know, our border.
All right, well, hold on, Chad.
Secured.
Let me you threw out a bunch there. You got a lot there, Chad.
So well, I'm not finished, you know.
You're finished because you're just gonna go on a whole huge resume of stuff that you're not gonna let me address. So how this is gonna work, Chad, is you've thrown out a lot. There's a lot there for me to respond to. The economy you brought up. The economy right now is humming along, 3.6% unemployment. You know, better than it's been in 50 years. We've got, you know. You name the group, they're employed, they're doing better. Joe Biden inherited a mess, an absolute mess. And who allowed that mess to happen? You want to throw that out there? Do you want me to tell you what it is? Donald Trump messed things up. So you can't forgive the last year and a half of his presidency. Now, you brought up some other stuff, the energy independence. We're moving in a direction to become energy independent. We are doing a whole bunch on renewables, doing a whole bunch on trying to create our own energy at home. I think that's the right path. So you've thrown out a bunch there. And look, I'm not a Trump fan. But he didn't do the things he said. He talked about, you know, we're going to bring jobs back. That didn't happen. We're going to invest in infrastructure. That didn't happen. You know who's doing that? Jelly Bucket Joe. The guy who shows up, maybe stutters a little bit, but is actually doing the work, Chad. So for me, it's pretty simple where we are in this moment. Does that make sense to you? All right, I guess Chad's gone. It is. What do we got? We've got John in Wisconsin. I got 30 seconds. John, real quick, what's on your mind, buddy?
Got a quick question for you.
Hit me.
Okay. So the book, the Mockingbird book, is that appropriate for a five-year-old?
No, I read it in high school.
Okay, perfect. So I don't know why Democrats are getting all bent out of shape about these book bans when some of the material isn't even appropriate for the age.
Yeah, the Kill a Mockingbird isn't in a kindergartner's class. I'm sorry, I'm not going there. I got to take a break. I appreciate the call, John. Thanks so much. Quick break, right back. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I got to tell you, it's one of those things that makes me wonder, you know, because it's not all about Orange Man bad. It's about Trump is a bad guy. I mean, and I'm hoping he ends up where he belongs over the things that he's done. But it's again, policy stuff. You know, I think Biden is doing the right thing, moving us in the right direction. And that is a good thing. And as I said from the beginning, I bust Biden's shoes for not being able to get a sentence out. But, you know, honestly, have you listened to Trump lately? Anyway, it's remarkable where we are. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. I've asked our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, political analyst, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thank you, Rick.
So, you know, I'm in this spot. You know, I'm looking at the economic numbers. I'm looking at the job numbers that are coming out. I'm looking at the fact that, you know, coming out of the pandemic, when Biden took over, you know, things are, you know, moving in the right direction. We're creating 13.2 million jobs over 29 months. Inflation's lowering. Wages are going up. You know, all of this stuff moving us in the right direction. And still you've got this, you know, Biden's bad. You know, Bidenomics is no good for us, and his numbers are down, and they shouldn't be because we're doing some really good stuff.
Well, if you look at the current, I think you have to look at the current economic trends for 2023. It's going to expand at a maybe the pace we don't completely want, but it's going to expand.
Right.
That's number one, and that's coming back because you said a lot there that's very accurate, but it's coming back off of COVID. It's coming back off of, you know, high inflation. It's coming back off of, you know, reeling from the supply chain, you know, on and on and on. So there's going to be in late 2023, at worst, let me put it that way, a potential for a mild readjustment. You can call it a rescission. I'm not calling it a recession, but you can call it a rescission. Now, there'll still be some long-term average annual growth. I think if you look at, you know, predictions that are out there, I think that's probably going to be, you know, fairly accurate. So they aren't bad numbers. Now, I personally, from looking political side to this, I don't like, you know, the Reaganomics, Bidenomics. I don't know. I personally, I think that
you know, he can talk on the issue. I'm not so sure I would have developed that as you know, the theme. Now that they've done it, though, this would be my advice to the White House, not that they would want to undertake it, but if they were paying me, my advice would be don't back down off of it.
No.
Do not back down off of this. You've went with it. He's got an economic program. Because now they're saying, well, this isn't. Don't back down off of it.
Don't be Democrats. Don't be wishy-washy.
Just plow forward, move ahead, take it out to the public, you know, have the cabinet members talking about it. And those are the things that they need to, you know, to do. I had coffee this morning at 8 o'clock in the morning with a really – we talked about this a very interesting person who was active in Republican politics for years. He's still Republican. He says he stays in the party to irritate them. And, you know, he's very economic, you know, economics focused. And we were talking about this today. He was talking about messaging, you know. And we were talking about Democrats and Republicans. And he said, you know, the Republicans get bad messaging when they get off on the Marjorie Taylor Greens, you know, and things like that.
Right.
But he said on the Democrat side, he said it seems to him that trying to satisfy pockets of interest, you know, well, we're going to try and take care of this, take care of that. He said, if you look at the broad picture and you look at the economics, you know, that's what he said today. Go with it.
No, it's the James Carville. It's the economy, stupid. For me, it's always been. And the reason I think the Bidenomics thing works for me anyway is because you're demarking a sea change. You know, this idea that neoliberalism, I'm hoping, is dead. I'm hoping we can put a stake through its heart. I'm hoping we can undo some of the supply side voodoo Reaganomics stuff. I'm hoping we can undo the things that got us into the mess that we're in. And you know, the line Biden uses, which I think is incredibly important, bottom up, middle out, that the concern is working people. That's the heart of the Democratic message, you know, from the FDR years through today. And it's still the message. And I wish they would just stick to that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And the reason I don't think the word is bad. I don't think that, you know, having Bidenomics and selling it, you know, is a bad thing. But I know in the beginning, and this is what I can't stand. In the beginning, they had a debate on this in the White House. They weren't real resolved on it, and it all leaked out to the press. I just can't. I can't stand that. You know, I mean, you've been involved in retail politics, you know, the vast majority of your life. Have you ever went into at the local level? And if you get behind a candidate, have you ever went in a meeting where, you know, it just all leaks out the next day? I mean, that doesn't happen a whole lot, but it does.
Yeah.
When it comes to the White House's, I don't know.
Someone got an idea and they threw it out there because, hey, I'm going to write a book after this is all done and take credit for it.
So as long as they stay with it, promote it, be proud of it, go out in the right way and, you know, talk about it and do what you need to do, don't back down from it, they'll be okay on it.
No, because the very real message here, and look, you know, I've said, you know, from the beginning, I think Biden's got a problem in re-election because he's not the great communicator. He's not Obama. He's not Clinton. But he's got policies that are going to help people if only they would do a much better job of messaging around it. The fact that, you know, I went to the invest.gov website and I spent, you know, like a half an hour looking at all of the projects that are going on because of his policies, all of the jobs that are being created, all the infrastructure that's being rebuilt. And yet somehow his economic approval ratings are 7 points lower than his overall numbers, which tells me that they're just not doing a good enough job messaging. And I love what Josh Shapiro did here in Pennsylvania by putting a camera on that bridge going, hey, you can watch the progress. I wish we would do more of that stuff.
Well, and look, Shapiro, he is a living, breathing playbook. He really is.
Yeah.
On doing things, appealing to the, you know, the workers, whether he's, you know, bipartisan in somebody's eyes or not, he comes across as that way, you know, significantly reaching out for what it's worth.
Why not reach out? And if the Republicans slap your hand back in Pennsylvania, then you reach out again, you know, and you keep going with your agenda. So I think it's a playbook to look at.
No, I think what he does is incredible. He's, and it shows. He's got a 58% approval rating here in the state, while Biden's is well under 50%. So there's something to be said there. And look, I love the fact that they're out doing this Investing in America tour. We should be highlighting it. But here's the problem. Biden gave a speech in South Carolina, and it was an economic speech. None of the networks picked it up. It was one of those things where you go,
what do you make of that?
Well,
why?
Trump was on everywhere all the time. Whenever he spoke, there were cameras on him, mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. He's, to be honest, he's gold. He's going to bring eyeballs. People want to see what craziness he's going to see. Mm-hmm. He's like the Howard Stern of politics. Mm-hmm. You know, there was in the movie, there was a scene where he's going, they're talking about, you know, why people watch or listen to the show. He's going, you know, people who love him listen for like 15 minutes.
Right.
But, you know, people who hate him listen for 3 hours.
Right.
And why are they listening? Because they want to see what he's going to say next. And
exactly.
That's the Trump effect in politics. You know, Biden doesn't have that kind of command. It's just getting the work done, which is why I've been calling him Jelly Bucket Joe. He shows up, does the work, and goes home. I think that's important, but we got to do some of the song and dance.
Right. Well, also, as time progresses here, and again, I say the word mantra all the time. I told candidates when I was advising them, get a mantra. Have your supporters have the same mantra. You know, what is, you know, a mantra is you repeat it.
Like, yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do? We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to balance the nation's budget. We're going to reform education. You got your mantra. You don't want to make it too difficult.
Nope, simple.
You don't want to make it too long. But you get your mantra, and they've got to stick to it. And I keep saying that because as time goes on, although, as you know, I don't think it will be Trump, but as time goes on, Trump is, you know, the message for the Republicans is getting stepped on and is going to get stepped on. The House leadership knows it. The Senate Republican leadership knows it. There's not much they can do about it, but that's what's happening. So it's, you know, it's going to be two different messages. And then you have to look at the one message from Trump. Trump trying to get out of his legal troubles, what does that do for John and Susie lunch bucket tomorrow morning to help raise their kids?
Nothing.
No. So, I mean, those are the questions that, I'd be pointing out in the campaigns. And then you say what Biden is doing to make sure that, you know, John and Susie Smith can pay the bills and try to help the kids in the community tomorrow.
No, I mean, that's what politics is about. How are you planning to make people's lives better? And sadly, when I look at someone like Trump and I look at Republicans right now, it's all about how can we make people's lives worse? For instance, like today, the big news was, you know, Trump wants to bring back travel bans. Evidently, we're going to bring them back bigger and better than before. He said, when I return to office, the travel ban is coming back even bigger than before and much stronger than before. We don't want people blowing up our shopping centers. I don't know where that came from, but it's music to the base. It's red meat for the base to get them all. Yeah, we're gonna go get them. I don't know who we're talking about, but we're gonna get them.
Yeah, and it'll be yes, you're right, even bigger than before. Which I don't know, you know, if that means you ban the entire world for coming here. That ban. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm a senior moment. The ban was upheld by the court, right, Supreme Court?
Yeah, it was, I believe, yes.
Right, yes. So, and it had Muslim countries, and then, of course, North Korea and Venezuela, but he had the Muslim countries in it. And also, something else that I don't know, I would do some research on if I was the White House and point it out, the amount of non-publicized immigration tampering because of Miller, you know who he is.
Yeah, the guy who wanted to use drones to sink, people trying to come here on boats. Yeah, I know.
Right, and Miller wants to stop legal, L-E-G-A-L, legal immigration, green cards, fiancé visas, students, et cetera, coming into America. The embassies throughout the world, and I can prove what I'm about to say, and I've sent messages, and nobody seems to get traction on it for some reason.
throughout the world were systematically not approving marriages that were legitimate, that were proven. They weren't approving students who had approved college visas to come to the United States. And it wasn't just, you know, countries like, it wasn't North Korea. It was, you know, countries we deal with all the time, you know, including India. And this was being systematically carried out through the embassies. I think it's loosened up a bit, but if he announces he's going to be bigger and better, there's going to be all kinds of things that are going to be done where, you know, to come here for tourism is going to be tough.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, you know,
which is economic.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting you bring that up because, you know, I was going to go with, you know, bring up Ron DeSantis, who says that he's going to debate Trump with or without him. He's going to debate without with or without Trump. And I'm going, are we bringing cardboard cutouts back? Is the empty chair with Clint Eastwood coming back? Are we going to borrow that?
Well, here's the thing, too. Look, Trump's, you know, not decided whether he's going to, you know, debate or not, et cetera. And then DeSantis, so yeah, bring the chair back. And the Republican National Committee is still, you know, holding their pledge. Well, you've got to, you know, and Trump's ahead. And if he stays in, which I think he will get out, but if he stays in, then the National Committee is going to say, well, if you, you know, if you don't pledge, then we don't, we won't allow you there. He, DeSantis won't have an opportunity if he doesn't pledge to support the winner of the primary.
Yeah.
He's not even going to have an opportunity. They won't even let him on stage.
No, that's an interesting point. And the weird thing is DeSantis is supposedly a smart guy. I mean, he's Ivy League educated. This is supposedly a smart guy. And it seems like everything he's doing is backfiring except for, you know, the base. And now I just saw a story that, you know, people, you know, tourism experts are panicking in Florida because they're afraid that, you know, all of these conventions that were supposed to happen in the Sunshine State are being canceled. You know, people are scrapping their plans because they don't want to go to a place where, you know, their group is hated or there are people in their group who are going to be hated because DeSantis has created this kind of unfriendly political atmosphere that people want to run away from. I don't know that he's, I don't know that he gets any traction given the fact that he's already viewed as that guy.
There's two people, and I said this today to a guy that called me and asked me about, you know, some things that were going on. And I said, there's two people that I can say today, stick a fork in them. One is Rudy Giuliani,
yes.
And the other is DeSantis. He's done. He's done. I don't. If Trump bows out tomorrow, he's done.
He's still done.
And the ad, which, you know, I've been campaigning since, you know, for candidates since 1973, I have never seen anything like that ad.
Wasn't that weird?
It was beyond weird. I mean, you know, here's DeSantis. There's a guy with his shirt off, all oiled up, and then it flashes to DeSantis. And you're like, what message is he trying to say, you know, in these ads? And then it made him look like, I don't know, they had the screen shaking. It is an ad worth watching because it is so disturbing that, you know, even people that supported him winced and looked away.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think Buttigieg had the perfect line. He goes, you know, I don't know what it says when you're putting your image between two oiled up bodybuilders. But, you know, he said, look, and I like how he finished. He goes, I don't know what some people wake up thinking about if they're going to help people or what, but I wake up every day thinking about how we're going to make lives better. I think he's an incredible politician. I don't think he's ever going to be president, but I think he's an incredible politician because it made me wonder, you know, if this is the kind of stuff that you're campaigning on, what are you going to actually do for us? What's the plan? What's the vision? There doesn't seem to be one.
Well, DeSantis also took the issues that can be discussed on, you know, on the transgender issues. There can be certain issues that will be discussed on whether it's transgender or not transgender or straight or gay, about kids, certain ages, what you teach, you know, first grade or second, you know, you don't do certain things. Parents, you know, you can discuss those things. He didn't do that. He took it and he went so overboard in every single direction that you just wonder if he's stuck on this topic. You know, stuck on it.
So if he's out,
when you think of DeSantis, that's what you think of.
No, he's the woke warrior. Everything about it is whatever that is, whatever he views the woke is, that's where he's at. So if DeSantis is done sticking a fork into him, and you don't think Trump's going to be the guy, who's got the inside scoop then? Who are you seeing that might get it?
Well, I know she's not exciting in the sense, you know, and on fire, et cetera, but Nikki Haley is still there, and you know, and she's female, and she's there. You've got Chris Christie. I know the whole bridge thing.
Never getting through the primary.
I know. I understand. But Chris Christie, you know, is a name out there. I see Pence as having zero.
No chance. Even less than Chris Christie.
And by the way, Pence went over to Paris and sunk his boat this past week. He got in with the people that Rudy Giuliani got in with, the Mujahideen Calk. He did that. Which I don't know who advised him on that one. So I see no traction there. So I don't know. I mean, you, Nikki Haley, I guess.
Yeah, I'm. My mind is still as the person who's not in yet. I think Brian Kemp and Nikki Haley.
Well,
I think that's a ticket that I think might get some traction.
But I think Haley is a part of this somewhere. I really do.
No, I agree, because you know you need to have that messaging. That, you know, we're not racist, that we're not all this other stuff. And look, she's a good politician. You know, she's smart. I don't like her. I don't like her policies. I think she's, a terrible politician in the functions. But I think, you know, she's as good as they get on the right. And I think I think someone like Brian Kemp, who's got that folksy good old boy kind of, you know, and the fact that he took Georgia in such a huge way. I think he's somebody who concerns me.
Right.
Well, we'll see. And that's why we play the game. But, Bob, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Ney. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1905. It was the 10th day of the convention in Chicago, Illinois, where William Big Bill Haywood of the Western Federation of Miners and Daniel De Leon and Eugene V. Debs of the Socialist Party founded the Industrial Workers of the World. The IWW, or Wobblies as they're sometimes called, was formed in part in response to the American Federation of Labor's opposition to organizing unskilled labor. Bill Haywood proclaimed in the founding convention, "This is the Continental Congress of the Working Class. We are here to confederate the workers of this country into a working class movement that shall have for its purpose the emancipation of the working class from the slave bondage of capitalism." In the first two decades of the 1900s, the IWW cut across traditional guild and union lines to organize workers in a variety of trades and industries. Many notable people were either members or supporters of the IWW, including Mother Jones, Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, and Joe Hill. Hill, along with Ralph Chaplin and T-Bone Slim, compiled a book of labor songs in 1909 known as the Little Red Songbook.
I dreamed I saw
The Wobblies were opposed to U.S. involvement in World War I, which they called a war for capitalism and empire. However, in 1917, Congress passed the Espionage Act, which exacted harsh financial penalties or even jail time for anyone speaking out against the war. One of the people arrested under the Espionage Act was Bill Haywood. In the aftermath, the IWW declined in membership and influence. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. So, next week on the program, so just kind of mental notes. Wednesday, we're going to be running a best of. It's travel day for us. heading out to Chicago, the Windy City. Netroots is having their big powwow. We generally show up and do our little song and dance, and looking forward to meeting people. All of the folks who are going to attend Netroots, looking forward to that. So we'll be broadcasting from Netroots, doing some live hits during the day. So we're looking forward to doing some of that stuff on social media. This is, I guess a couple thousand people from across the country come together and talk about how they're going to change the world. And I love being around a bunch of fire-breathing do-gooders. Important vision for the future, talking about how we're going to change the world, how we're going to make things better. We're going to have education for children and healthcare for families. It's going to be fabulous. It's going to be fabulous stuff. And I'm hoping, because sadly, during the break, I'm sitting here thinking, I'm going, we do spend a lot of time talking about the Orange Menace. We do talk around about Nectarine Nero and Tangerine Tiberius, maybe a little bit too much. But the reality is, this guy carries so much weight in a portion of this country that I'm concerned about what happens when he is held accountable. What happens when people wake up to the reality that he admitted to the things he's been charged with. He admitted it. Now, my friend Bob, he believes that Trump is going to bow out. I don't. I think he's got in his head the only way he stays out of jail is to become president and then pardon himself. That's where my mind goes. I don't know that it's impossible. And at the end of it, I got to tell you, I think his base would be okay with it. And being the champions of him doing that. History is being made. We are living what our great-grandchildren are going to look back on. And the question is, which side will your name be on when they look back on it? That to me is the interesting thing. I know, we don't want to learn about the past because, maybe our tree was not being watered properly. So maybe think about that. So the undecided voters, which side are you on? Anyway, if you missed any of today's program, make sure you grab the podcast wherever you find your favorite podcast. You will find ours. Also, you got something on your mind, something I said got under your skin, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks for being here. See you next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.